Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are back after, I guess, about a three-week layoff. We did our usual 2 weeks, and then I kind of had my wedding anniversary this past week, and we had a lot of family things going on, and so I have kind of forced us to have to delay for a little bit, but we're back on our usual Monday night recording now. What is new on your end of the spectrum?
I mean, it's June, so we're in the doldrums in terms of college football, but, you know, won't be long till it's SEC Media Days. We got preview magazines coming out and that kind of thing. But
yeah, in fact, as part of my anniversary gifts, this is how cool my wife is. She gave me George Vesey's 8 World Cups book. I'll mention more about that later on, very briefly, don't worry. But she also gave me, this is so cool, as one of my anniversary presents when I opened up a little package, Lindy Sports College Football 2014 preview. How is that?
Excellent.
I'm like, okay, I won't probably be talking to you the rest of the day now. I'm just going to be sitting there reading this. But I've been flipping through it, and there's some pretty neat stuff in there. Like, they have Rhett Lashley listed as the number 5 hottest coordinator, and they have lots of interesting things in this magazine. So they're the ones, they have us rated 6 going into the season, which is interesting, behind Ohio State, Oregon. I don't know how they could put Oregon and Ohio State ahead of us.
Oh, I am so not worried about where we're going to be ranked.
But this is Lindy's Sports College Football Preview. You're not going to sit up at night worrying if they have us 4th or 5th or 6th? Seriously? This is Lindy's Football Preview.
Here's the thing.
Okay, talk me down.
There's a playoff in college football after this season. If we win enough SEC games, we'll get there. It's no longer the 2004 scenario isn't going to happen to us again. You know, if we,
unless we're number 5.
But I mean, we're at coming off last year. Yeah. If we have a good season, we'll be fine. So
even your level headedness, dang it.
Sorry. Listen, I love the college football preview magazines. It's like a national holiday for me when they come out of the on the shelves, and I start, you know, standing in the, whether it's the grocery store or the run up to the Barnes and Noble and get them or whatever. But I enjoy them.
You know, the funny thing about getting them up here in the Illinois area is that this one has Notre Dame on the cover. I'm sure that's really selling a lot down in Alabama and Georgia. The Notre Dame issue.
I mean, nowadays they aren't as big a deal. In the pre-internet days, you know, I used to always get the Sporting News one. I really enjoyed that one. And the Phil Steele one is a lot of good information in it. But, for example, to have the schedule of every team at your fingertips was very handy in the days before all that stuff was easily findable on the internet.
Yeah, I have like an app on my phone now that just opens the Auburn football schedule. And then I have a link to that LSU page we always talk about that has every TV game on. So it is a different world. But I wanted to get your this is, none of this was planned. This is sort of impromptu because it occurs to me since we're talking about the magazines. What is your feeling about the Phil Steele magazine? What do you think? Well, I mean, just in general, what do you think about that whole thing? Him and his, you know, wild predictions and
I enjoy it because I like, I mean, I like data and I like data analysis, and there's a lot of that in there. Yeah. I mean, I always enjoy the stuff in there about turnovers, and I enjoy the stuff like he has specific things about numerical rankings about passes, pass defense, and pass defense efficiency, and those kind of things. And I enjoy digging through that stuff. I enjoy digging through seeing where the SEC teams are, where they think they're going to be this year. And the other thing that he does is he kind of has like a regular ranking, and then he has kind of a power ranking based on how good you really are, regardless of the schedule. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because this year that would put Auburn higher in the power rankings than it
that's
would
right.
in the regular rankings.
Right. So I think that kind of thing I think is interesting to look at.
That's
too.
As good of an explanation as I've ever heard in a concise little bit of speech of the difference between power rankings and regular rankings. I heard the solid verbal guys, bless their heart, they're so good at so many things. But they were trying. Somebody asked them, "What's the difference between regular rankings and power rankings?" And they really both kind of floundered around and couldn't answer it. And you just put your finger on it, which is the power rankings don't take into consideration the schedule. They're just sort of a hypothetical. If everybody played everybody, or everybody played the same schedule, kind of a look, aren't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
And and some people view regular rankings that way, and some people view them as this is how I think the teams are going to finish the year.
Yeah.
Based on how good they are plus their schedule.
Well, here's the thing about Phil Steele. I mean, you know, you'll read it, it's so insane in some ways. The only thing he has going for him that redeems the insanity of his magazine is how accurate he is. Of course, he picks like 27 teams every year that could go undefeated. And when one of them does, everybody's like, Phil Steele's a prophet. He knows the future, because one of the 27 teams that could have gone undefeated did. Yes, yes. Well, I have studied teams that played on 6 to 7 inch grass during a hailstorm in September, and have found that 90% of the time, the team in blue tends to score more than 21 points. Therefore, Rutgers will go 11-1. And you're just like, what? That's what it comes across to me sometimes, you know, but he, you know, he called 2010 more or less, didn't he? So
the only thing that bugs me in the Phil Steele is where he starts using all these acronyms and
oh yeah
for players and
the PTY various... of the JRZ yeah. is yeah. 0.7 positive of the DRPRC. Just like it sounds like a meeting of the Korean Communist Party apparatus or something, you know.
And again, like the numbers and the tables and stuff that magazine don't bother me a bit. I go straight to that stuff. But it's when he starts, like in the individual team pages, he'll have some good stuff about the schedule. But then he'll have like a little paragraph about what happened the last couple of years, and it'll half be like acronyms that you have to decipher what yeah. he's talking about. So.
7 of my 10 predictors are indicating that Tulane will win 6 games this year. Okay, great. That's fantastic, Phil. All right. Well, let's move on into the substance of our actual conversation tonight. I think that we were supposed to talk about this last time and sort of mercifully forgot, but we really do need to touch on it again. We've talked about it some, and that's the national championship argument. Now, it peaked and has kind of receded, but never let it be said that everybody else no longer talking about something will prevent us from dragging it out of the crypt and beating the dead horse some more. I did get into a couple of interesting Twitter arguments over the last 7 days or so with people that have very strong feelings about it. And this is, to be fair, something that people have very strong feelings about. So what exactly happened that got this all fired up again?
Well, what happened at the beginning was Auburn changed some wording on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of a prelude to what really happened, and that is that Auburn has established a committee for the purpose of deciding whether to claim any additional national championships, and if so, which ones, and they'll make a decision before this football season, so then they can put up banners or put in the stadium or whatever. And they're going to look at the historical stuff and make a decision. So I think that's perfectly fine.
Well, first, let me give what I thought was I don't agree with it, but I think it is a very legitimate argument that somebody was making with me on Twitter. I'm willing to admit when somebody, you know, comes at me with an approach I haven't considered before, I'm willing to consider it, and I, you know, I appreciate that it's an interesting perspective. Just like when Michael Scott Nicky came to us all with his book, you know, laying out his perspective, it changed. You know, I said, well, I've changed my mind now. Well, I forget who it was, but somebody on Twitter was debating it with me last week, and they made the position that no team has claimed a national championship they weren't claiming before for like the last 48 years. In other words,
that is factually incorrect.
Well, but let me make sure I'm making it clear what they're saying before you say that, okay? Because you may be right, but I want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing. Because it threw me for a second. What he was saying is there have been teams in the last few years to claim national championships they had not previously claimed, but they had not claimed years prior to about 40-something years ago. In other words, he's saying that the years they claimed...
The statute of limitations or something.
Yeah, that the years...
Anything that, before that has opened a discussion, but since then it's not.
So in other words, claiming 1913 would be more acceptable in that mindset, but claiming 2004, for example, would be no, because you don't claim years that just happened recently and we didn't accept them then, but suddenly we do now. So I can kind of understand that perspective, right? In other words, why is it okay now, but it wasn't just a few years ago? What do you say to that?
I mean, I understand the logic, but and I think it comes down to the discussion that you and I had with Michael Scott Nicky. There's different claims in each year, and they have different merits, and you have to wade through them and pick the ones that have the most merit, whether it's a recent claim or a far back claim. I think I'm skeptical that it's that far back that nobody's claimed anything. I really, really am. I believe there are some split national championships in the 60s and 70s. I guess that is that far away now, but that people are claiming. But
yeah,
I mean, this is the thing that people need to understand about this topic. Okay, there is no governing body in college football. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is going to come down and say you got a national championship. That has never happened, okay? Ever. Mm-hmm. Not last year, not the year before, and not the year before that. None of those teams are the NCAA national champions. Like in basketball, mm-hmm. and in baseball and in women's gymnastics, you could be the NCAA national champion. And college football, that doesn't happen, mm-hmm. because there is not an NCAA playoff, okay? So in this is the one sport where there is no definitive NCAA champion every year. It's a matter of subjective opinion decided by these other things. The BCS is not the NCAA. It was just a group of the power conferences that set up a bunch of bowls and a deal between the bowls and the power conferences to make money. Mm-hmm. It didn't have anything to do with national championships. So I think people assume that there's some higher authority out there that's going to come along and go, yes, no, yes, no. And there's just not. I mean, so the first thing is there isn't – it's not like the NFL or the Major League Baseball or somebody, or in college, men's and women's college basketball, there's a tournament. Somebody wins, mm-hmm. they're at the national championship. It's the end. It's very definitive, and it's difficult to go back and say, yeah, well, you know – that one year we had a great season, we were national champions. Well, no, because everybody saw the tournament, you didn't win. So this is different. There's 100 teams. Back in the old days, you only played 9 games or 8 games, and you only played a small slice of the country. It was a very local, regional kind of game. You didn't play everybody, and, you know, a team over here could be undefeated, a team over there could be undefeated, and one newspaper says this team's the best, and one newspaper says that team's the best. So that's the kind of thing it comes down to. And I think we could talk through the specific cases involving Auburn if you want to see how we feel about it. But I think the first thing people understand is nobody in the NCAA or anyone else is going to say you're the national champion or you're not. This is all just subjective.
Yeah. That's an excellent
point. And it's all subjective, and it's all like you claim it if you want it.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, you've seen all this stuff about this backlash on the social media stuff, but that's the price of doing business in college football. So I don't have a problem with that.
Well, to kind of flesh out these points a little bit more, I think that one of the 1960s Alabama ones was like where this person was drawing the line as the most the most recently, not the most recently claimed, but the most recent one that has ever been claimed later, okay, was like a 60-something Alabama. But my answer to that is, okay, so what? Well, if we claim 83, then there's a new one that's the most recently claimed. I don't care. What difference does it make whether Alabama or Air Force or Auburn is the ones claiming the most recent one? I don't care. Now, the other point this person made that I thought was very good, but I destroyed it, was they were saying that I pointed out that this gets us into the cherry-picking argument, and I want to elaborate on that for just a second. But first, this person was saying we should only claim the ones that are consensus national championships. And, you know, I was saying, well, what we're talking about is claiming the ones that the NCAA already recognizes as being national championships, some organization or some polling institution or some media outlet has awarded.
Right.
And that gets us into the cherry picking argument. I'm going to get to that in just a second. But he said, I only want Auburn to claim the ones that are consensus. And I said, well, then you're throwing out Georgia Tech's, you're throwing out Colorado's, you're throwing out Alabama 1978, which is, by the way, fine with me, but you're throwing out any that divided, right? The Alabama LSU and USC in 03, right? Any of the ones where one organization went one way and the other one went the other, when there's two big organizations. And this person said, no, those were both in those years, those were both consensus national championships.
No, they were.
And I said, if you look in the dictionary, the definition of consensus is everybody agrees. So you, by definition, it cannot be a consensus national championship if there's two major selectors and they each select somebody different. That's not a consensus national championship. And that's like a third of the national championships in the last 30 years.
Well, and then when you go back further than that, it's all of them.
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
I mean, there were multiple media organizations and groups, and they picked different teams in it. So you always ended up with three or four teams.
Now, the cherry-picking argument is this. What Auburn was doing was listing the years that the NCAA says this was awarded to Auburn by somebody.
Right, and the NCAA specifically screens these selectors and picks them, these organizations or individuals, and they're NCAA-approved selectors. It's not the NCAA saying it's a national championship. It's the NCAA saying, here's this group of bodies that we say are okay with picking national champions out of the past.
So New York Times, Sagarin, yes. Better Homes and Gardens, Alabama 41 or whatever? No. You know. Okay. So this is the thing that I see so much confusion about. Because 2004 is the perfect example. If you ask Auburn fans which of our quote unquote national championship years should be the first one we claim, and they don't really know about 1913, which I think can be forgiven given that it's 2014, they'll quickly say 2004. And they'll say, well, you know, if I had to choose the Auburn years that I would claim 2004. And my point is this. That is going through and you cherry picking the ones you think are the most, quote unquote, legitimate that you want to, quote unquote, claim. But that's not what Auburn did on the website. What Auburn did was not, quote unquote, claim. They didn't claim any. They just listed. But when they listed, they did not list 2004, because while you may want to cherry pick 2004 as having a good argument to be number one, nobody really, other than fans poll, right, and a couple of other tiny things that were not recognized by the NCAA, picked Auburn number one. Now you can say, well, USC forfeited it, and so it's vacated, and Auburn was number two. And I'm like, heck yeah, man. I wish that one of those organizations, when they revisited it, you remember?
Yeah.
They revisited and they voted no. So there is no national champion from 2004. Now, does Auburn deserve it? Heck yeah. Did we get it? No. So you can cherry pick 2004, but it's not one that's going to be listed right now on the website. On the other hand, people say, well, 1993, I would never cherry pick that one because 1993, we didn't even go to the SEC championship game. We couldn't play in a bowl, et cetera, et cetera. Well, guess what? You wouldn't have cherry picked, you wouldn't have chosen 1993, but the NCAA did. They found multiple selectors that had listed Auburn number one for that year. So the ones that you happen to think, I mean you in general, not you, John, obviously. The one,
me,
it's all your fault, right? So in other words, the years that Auburn can claim are different from the ones you might think Auburn can claim, depending on the criteria. If your criteria are, it makes me feel like that was our year, like 2004, then yeah, you'll pick 2004. But if your criteria are somebody legitimate that the NCAA recognizes as a legitimate selector did select Auburn that year, then you can't take 2004, but you can take 1993. Your Honor?
You don't have to convince me.
I know, but I just see people confusing those two things. They act like, well, we ought to claim 2004, but we shouldn't claim 93. And I'm like, you actually have it backwards. Because we have from a legalistic standpoint, we have a better argument for 93 by far than we do for 2004.
And it's good. The NCAA has changed its standard about all this kind of stuff. You know, yes, we were on probation in 1993. Well, guess what? Alabama was on probation 3 years ago with the national title.
And Auburn didn't play in Atlanta in 1993. Well, guess what? Alabama didn't play in Atlanta in 2012, right? Yeah.
That's right. There you go.
Or 11, so 11, whichever one. The year that they lost LSU.
I mean, Auburn was on probation in 1957 when the national title.
Sure. Right.
So, but nobody's taking that down.
So let's go through them and thumbs up, thumbs down.
Okay.
We'll do our cherry picking here with the caveat that this is not how Auburn is going to do it, I assume. I assume Auburn's going to go by recognized selector.
Fan?
Yes.
They're going to listen to this podcast and then just do whatever we tell them
to
do.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, then let's just say instead of everything I just said aside, let's do it by cherry picking now. And then I'll give the caveat of whether or not it should count in terms of the criteria.
Okay. Not, sure.
1913.
Yes, 100%.
Slam dunk, 100%. Absolutely. That one needs to go up on the stadium yesterday. In fact, it needed to go up on the stadium last year.
And this is the kind of thing I want to say to anybody else. Forget what anybody else outside of Auburn University thinks about what you're doing. Okay? Forget about all that stuff. Oh. I don't care what Alabama has done, and I don't care about the social media reaction. I don't care if Celebrity Hot Tub makes fun of us for the next 6 months. I don't care, okay? What I care about is that there was a team at Auburn that was one of the most dominant teams in the history
of football,
of all football, of college football, and we don't recognize this. They destroyed teams in the
South.
That's
an absolute insult to those players.
So, I mean, that's the team that we should just put up on the stadium tomorrow.
There shouldn't even be a meeting about that one. They just should all vote unanimously at the beginning of the meeting. 2013, all opposed. Okay, do it. You know, that one is just a slam dunk. Now, let me say this. I'm glad you said that because it reminded me of this. You know, the old, well, we can't do it because Alabama did it. We make fun of Alabama. No. If you use the recognized selector model, then in that case, you are quote-unquote claiming ones the NCAA recognizes. The NCAA does not recognize all of Alabama's. The ridiculous year where they lost to Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, they don't get that one under the model that Auburn's using. So we can still make fun of them. It's not like we're forfeiting completely.
But my thing is, the only thing you're forfeiting is the right to laugh quite as much about the Alabama
that
thing.
You know what? I've done it for how many years? I've done enough.
But I'm just saying, like, I agree. That's the only thing Auburn is giving up in this.
Yeah.
But I don't care.
All right. So 13 is that. 1914.
I believe so, yes.
See, I feel like we didn't have as good of a record as somebody else, and nobody selected us. So we were really, really good, but we didn't go undefeated that year, and there was a team that did. So I have a little more of a problem with 1914.
Okay.
1958. I don't think that one.
No.
No. 1983.
Yes, we should claim it.
I think that because the New York Times, Sagarin, computer thing selected us, and like you say, it's all just subjective, right? It's not like the NCAA chooses one selector and says, this is the official one. Then that's the national championship. So, yes, 1983, absolutely.
I mean, and again, for people who weren't alive then and don't remember what happened, I want to draw a clear picture about what happened in 1983. Auburn was the highest-ranking team that won its bowl game. Okay? Everybody ahead of Auburn in the poll lost. Poll voters jumped a team below Auburn in the polls over Auburn and awarded them a national title in most polls. So it was purely a beauty contest scenario.
Yes.
That ended up with this in a voting thing.
Auburn played a harder schedule, one of the hardest schedules in college football history, finished 11-1, and Miami that jumped us was 5 going into the and had lost to a team we beat.
That's right. So that's the reason to me that like 1983 is the one where I don't have any problem saying yes. That, you know, the New York Times said they're national champions. That's an NCAA recognized selector. We should pick them.
1993.
I would encourage people to go to Michael Skodnicki's website, auburnsunclaimed.com, and read the excellent essay he wrote last week when this came up, where he really poked holes. There was a guy for Yahoo named Dan Wolkin, and Michael really poked a lot of holes in his arguments. And one of the things that he talked about is there's a group, the National College Football Foundation, I think, that recognized that they're recognized by the NCAA.
Yeah.
They picked the 93 team as their national champion.
Mm-hmm. The College Football Foundation, I think.
Auburn was not ineligible for the national championship.
Right.
Okay. And Auburn got – not only was Auburn not ineligible, Auburn got a bunch of number one votes in the AP poll.
Yeah.
Okay? It was not eligible in the coaches poll. It was eligible in the AP poll, and they got some number one votes. So there is a recognized selector that picked Auburn.
Only major undefeated team in the country that year.
This is the other part. Everybody else lost games.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a problem with it.
And we already have a precedent that you don't have to have played in the national in the SEC championship game to win the national championship. In fact, there have been teams that have played in the national championship game that lost their conference championship game.
Yep, Nebraska did.
Nebraska, right? So you know, to me, if Nebraska had been named national champion after all that, if they had won their bowl, that'd be less legitimate than the undefeated 1993 Auburn team. 2004.
I mean, there are recognized selectors that would pick it. I mean, that's the hardest one to me.
I don't think an NCAA recognized selector picked Auburn that year. That's the thing for me. That's the hang up for me.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think I'm wrong. But I'm saying the only reason there's even discussion about this is because USC has been stripped of the title.
Right.
And it's vacant.
Right.
So Auburn was undefeated and
number two
was vacant. And ended up number two, and the top spot was vacated. They forfeited every game, so their record that year was 0-11 or whatever. So, you know, Auburn it should have been awarded the national championship. I feel pretty strongly about that. That year I was so angry.
Yeah.
At the process and how it played out, and I think that should have happened. But I understand it didn't, and you know. But the other part is, you know, that was the year before the SEC streak began.
Well, 2005 Texas USC, and then it started in 06 with Florida.
That's right. So that's right. It was 2 years later the SEC streak began, and then there was now you'd say, oh my gosh, an undefeated SEC team, you know.
Oh yeah.
We're not leaving them out. What are you talking about?
I know, it's unbelievable. And there's an article in this Lindy's magazine about reasons that the playoff happened, and they list several things, including that year that Nebraska got in without winning their conference championship game, et cetera. And they list a couple. They list the Alabama LSU debacle, but they don't even mention us, which I was shocked because everything else I've ever read said that the 2004 Auburn team is the poster child for changing the system.
That's right.
So, my feeling on 2004 is basically, with all my heart and soul, I want to claim it, but it depends on what criteria we use. And I want to be, I don't want to pull an Alabama and use wishful thinking. So if 2004 has to be left out to make the others more quote unquote legitimate, then I guess. But if you want to be more expansive, then I'm the first one in line to say let's claim it. So I just think it depends on what conditions you lay down. You want something even funnier about not getting into the vacated spot when you're number two? I think it's the 1987-88 Auburn basketball team, which was like the last year with Chris Morris and Jeff Moore and Gerald White and all them.
Oh, yeah.
That team finished number two in the SEC, and Kentucky was number one. And what do we know happened to Kentucky in the late 80s in basketball?
They got on probation and they had to vacate everything.
They vacated that title. So Auburn basically could claim the 1987-88 SEC basketball championship if we wanted to, if we wanted to use the whole vacated thing. But, you know, again, that's another, just like the 04 Auburn, the football team. They just, when it's vacated, it's vacated. So it's just a weird, just that the 2004 football team, it just seems so ridiculous to vacate that title when there's a perfectly deserving team right there. But, you know, what can you do? All right. Have we laid the discussion permanently to rest? Have we solved the problem?
I feel like we've made our feelings known. I think, again, the important thing to me is I don't care what anybody else thinks about it. It's the right thing to do, therefore do it.
Yeah.
I don't care what Alabama did or does or what anybody else says about it. It's the right thing to do, so do it.
And I totally changed my position from a couple of years ago when it was don't ever do it, just do it our way. And I now think, because what really convinced me was the players, that, you know, these guys did all that they did and were champions. And for their own institution to not recognize them as champions when the NCAA does, that to me is the final straw right there. So, you want to do some quick hit topics?
Sure.
What do you got?
I guess the first one is, we talked a little bit about preseason magazines. What are you seeing in that? What's the temperature gauge you're getting for Auburn?
4-6 nationally, and behind Alabama in the West. So basically, second in the SEC West, but not worse than 6th nationally. It's pretty amazing. And I want to know what they're seeing about Alabama that has them number one or number two in all these rankings. I guess they're seeing all the defense or the running backs or whatever, but I don't know.
I think they think that Nick Saban just rolls them out there and it magically reassembles itself every year.
Yeah, which is not entirely wrong, I guess, but...
Yeah, but, again, offensive line wasn't the same last year, and now they're going to replace the quarterback. To replace the best player in the whole team was Mosley, and the two best players. Again, the secondary was a problem last year. We're going to replace the two safeties. And their best cornerback in the spring broke his leg, so we'll see.
It is kind of funny that if Alabama does play Florida State in the national championship final game this year, it, you know, in 2013 you had Jameis Winston facing his former coach in Damian, and then now and with that scenario you'd have him facing his former backup quarterback.
You know, that's not going to happen.
It'd be a battle of which Florida State quarterback comes out ahead. So, I got to tell you, as much as I hate Alabama with every fiber of my being, I'd have a hard time rooting for Jameis Winston over anybody. Ugh.
That's one of those games you just root for a meteor.
That's what. The meteor game. That's what I've always said. That's right. I coined that term with the 93 Auburn Florida SEC championship game. Because I just...
No, not Auburn, Florida.
I'm sorry. Alabama, Florida. Oh, gosh, what am I saying? Yes, I always think about 93 Florida. I think about Auburn. Yeah, the 1993 SEC championship game, Alabama and Florida. I mean, and then they played again in 94 and 96. And, you know, you can't root for either one of them. So you just got to hope for the meteor to hit the stadium.
That's it.
Okay.
What have you heard about Carl Lawson? What's going on there?
Well, the little inside scoop from my the Wishbone sideline reporters that we've had this past week. Supposedly, now this is totally unofficial, okay? But supposedly, the doctors, well, I don't know if people even out there even know he's been injured because it's been very hush-hush. But supposedly Carl Lawson hurt his knee late in spring practice. And they first thought it wasn't that bad, but then it turned out to be probably because he's just so strong. He's kind of like Bo, you know, he's just so strong that you don't realize how bad he's hurt something for a while. So then they operated, they went in and looked, and at that point they had about decided that it was going to be really, really bad, you know. But then supposedly I heard that once the doctors got inside there, it wasn't as bad perhaps as they had thought. And so he thinks he's going to come back and play this fall, but the coaches are kind of holding their breath thinking he may not even play at all. He may take a medical red shirt in 2014. So there are going to be a lot of people very surprised when the announcement suddenly comes if he has to take a medical red shirt for the whole season.
But I think the important thing is there's been no official announcement. We're in the rumor mongering
stage. Oh, absolutely, here, yes.
And we don't – you don't know anything specifically here that colleges, especially, you know, Auburn is very tight-lipped about all this stuff. They're not going to say anything.
Right.
So we literally won't know until, you know, fall practice opens, and even then we may not know for sure.
Yeah, and you just got to hope that he can get back to his, you know – anything like his former ability because he's so amazing. But the word I'm hearing, yeah, again, is that they've got a series of exercises and things he's able to do in his current condition. So he's continuing to work out. He's working out a lot. He's working out with the team, but he has to do certain things that don't, you know, hurt his just operated on leg. So let's all just cross our fingers and say a prayer and whatnot that Carl's wheel is back up to speed soon.
All right.
And tell me this. What do you see happening on that defensive front if he cannot play this year?
Well, I mean, it's a big loss because, you know, Dee Ford's gone.
Right.
And we need somebody to be the number one pass rusher, especially on the you know, quarterback's blind side. And everybody kind of expects him to be that guy. Now, you'll still have Ladarius Owens, I think, on one side. Mm-hmm. Maybe he steps up. And maybe Elijah Daniels steps up and be the defensive end. I don't think he's quite as quick as Lawson, but he had made a lot of plays last year. Mm-hmm. So maybe he steps up to be the guy.
And we also have that heavy formation that they were using. That worked out kind of good that they were putting some defensive tackles out there.
Right. We have some bigger guys who could play. You know, we could put Montrevious Adams or Gabe Wright out there when we play more power run teams. But, you know, we're going to need, especially the way our offense is, we're going to score a lot of points. So we're going to get ahead of other teams. Then they're going to try and throw the ball. So we need guys that can rush the passer and get pressure on them. And so that's why Lawson's so valuable.
But I would not look for him against Arkansas for sure. Huh? Even if he's better, you know, I just don't think he's going to go out there and The coaching staff and Gus got raises this past week, and Rhett Lashley just about got doubled. What do you think about that? Somebody on Twitter asked me, is he worth it? You answer that question.
Well, I mean, in a logical way, no college football coach is worth the money we paid.
Well, right.
Okay, they're not.
That being said.
But absolutely. I mean – yeah, Auburn's athletic department made, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars last year, and these coaches are the big reason why they performed the turnaround with that group of young men, and you know, really convinced them that they were capable of doing amazing things, and put them in the right position to do so, and they went out and did it. And also the in-game coaching on both sides of the ball is excellent. So, yeah, I think they're worth every nickel they could get. And so I don't have any problem giving them a raise. And I know people were complaining about the amount of money or the buyout or whatever. I'm perfectly fine with it.
Whatever it takes to keep Gus there. And you know that Lashley's going to leave eventually, but I want him there as long as just to not disrupt things. You know, he's part of Gus's brain, and I like him being there doing what he does because we know what happens when the two of them work together. And I don't want Gus to have to break in somebody else in that role, you know.
That's right. They're simpatico.
Yes. You
know, they're a perfect rhythm together. They know what the other's thinking, and it allows them to execute on offense much faster than two coaches that don't have that kind of connection with each other.
I would argue there's no quicker way to turn the fortunes of a team downhill than replacing an offensive coordinator. We've seen it happen with...
Unless that offensive coordinator is Scott Leffler.
Well, that's what I mean. He's exactly what I'm talking about.
No, but I'm saying if you replace him, then your fortunes don't go downhill.
Unless you're starting out with Scott. Okay, I thought you meant unless you bring Scott. Right. No, yes.
No,
absolutely. That's the quickest way to turn it around good is to get rid of Scott Leffler. But, but yeah, we saw with Tuberville, you know, boosting the team when he brought in, like, Petrino, for example, or Borges, and then basically ruining the team when he brought in Franklin, and then when Chizik brought in Loeffler. So it just makes such a huge difference, and I just don't want to roll the dice that Gus just happens to find somebody that can be what Rhett Lashley is. So longer we keep him, the better to me.
That's right.
I had a couple of playoff notes here I thought was interesting. Let me just throw these out to you. You know, we've been concerned, we talked about this before, that we were a little bit concerned about will anybody travel for these games, considering you have to travel for your regular games if you go to those. Then you have to travel to Atlanta for the SEC Championship game. Then you have to travel to a semifinal bowl. Then you have to travel to a national championship bowl. Now, you know, if you only do this once every 20 years, that's one thing. But if you're these teams that go every couple of 3 or 4 years like we'd like to be, that starts getting into, you know, triple mortgage your house and you still can't do it. So I thought these numbers were interesting. It said, I was reading today that, you know, part of helping the bowls to sell tickets and be able to pay for themselves is requiring the two invited schools to buy X number of tickets separate from how many the bowl sells and whatever else, right? An allotment that goes to the schools, and the schools have to
share. Sure, bowls make teams buy tickets now.
That's what I'm saying, but now they'll have to do it twice, some of them. Mm. And they said, for example, Connecticut was on the hook for like $2 million because they didn't sell any of their Fiesta Bowl tickets because nobody in Connecticut wanted to go to freaking Phoenix for a Fiesta Bowl.
Those people were fools. They should have gone to Phoenix in January.
Well, yeah. But my point is, it's one thing to require a school to buy a set of an allotment of tickets. It's another to require them to buy two different ones in the same season. And here are the numbers. For the four semifinalist schools this coming year, the four semifinalist schools will be required to buy 12,500 seats each, which is not a lot. But some schools, it is a lot. Then the two finalist schools will be required to buy another 20,000 tickets. So that's 32,500 tickets you're going to be on the hook for if you make it all the way to the championship game. Again, if you only go every 20 years, you're like, I'll happily take that, you know, punch. But if you go every 3 or 4 years, I mean, it's all great and wonderful for Alabama fans to be going to these national championship games, but you got to wonder, there's going to be a lot of bankruptcy filed in trailer parks across Alabama the next couple of years, right?
Well, and it's interesting as you say that. It makes me think about the smaller schools. You know, if you're, you know, Auburn or Alabama or Florida or Michigan or Ohio State, you'll be fine, or Texas.
Yeah.
But, you know, if some miracle down the road, somebody like Vanderbilt or Wake Forest makes it to one of those things, I mean, this could be a different situation. They have much smaller enrollment, much smaller alumni base. They're gonna have a problem.
What if they get? And what if they go twice in like 3 years? You're putting them on the hook for like 65,000 tickets over a 3 year period.
They have to work out something where they're getting extra money from the playoff itself to help pay for that.
I just can't. Like I said, I was a big playoff proponent right up until the moment that I thought about having to pay to actually go, because I've already been in the position of having to choose between going to Atlanta in 2010 versus rolling the dice that we would win and get in the championship game, the BCS game. And it worked out. But I really rolled the dice because I, you know, what if we had, you know, if we had won in Atlanta in a narrow game and not gone to the BCS or whatever, you know, I would have missed a chance to see us win an SEC championship game. So,
That hasn't entered my thinking at all about the playoff because I'm assuming that, you know, I'm going to be at home on the couch 99.99% of the time when the playoffs are on. And I just look forward to it because I think this could be great football. So.
Yeah, but I want to go when it's us in one of those semifinals.
Of course you want to go, but, you know.
Yeah. But see, I actually try to find ways to do it. It just doesn't work out. The other playoff thing really quickly that I thought was just kind of amazing is this. I was just reading that all the members of the playoff selection committee, brace yourself. All the members of the playoff selection committee, when they were named to the committee, were given a magic iPad that lets them watch any college football game anywhere, anytime. You're speechless.
I want one of those.
I want one of those too. How do you get that? Oh, I mean, obviously you could be on the committee, but I mean, an iPad that gets any college football game anywhere, anytime. It's like the most perfect thing ever.
That'd be handy.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. And I'm not making that up at all. It's in the Lindy's magazine. So it must be true. Okay. Our last sort of feature, we're going to do a World Cup minute at the very end. Just a minute, just kind of updating on what's going on. But we were going to run through some position charts. Why don't we do we're getting close to up against it on time. Why don't we do maybe three tonight and then do three more next time? So
that's fine.
I'll let you pick the ones you want to scratch off of our little list tonight.
You know what? We're going to do some positions I'm really worried about. Are you ready for this?
Yes, let's do it.
Kicker and punter.
All right.
We're going to start with those two.
Let's do it. Kicker.
Daniel Carlson is the new kicker.
He's a redshirt
freshman. I know you got to learn that name. People at Auburn have been spoiled by the quality of the special teams, the kicking and the punting over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years. We've had years where it wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And other teams, you see in the games all the time, teams can't make a freaking 25-yard field goal.
That's right.
So, you know, we're going to get into the red zone a lot. A lot of pressure is going to be on Carlson to have the kind of season we had last year, to be accurate like we were last year. He was a highly recruited kid. You know, he's a highly recruited kicker.
Colorado Springs.
So, but is he, you know, can he be the same kind of guy as Parkey? I mean, Parkey was excellent. Mm-hmm. He was accurate. He had good distance.
Man, we've had good kicking the last few years. Cody Parkey and who was our punter?
We
just named him Special Teams Player of the Year, and we can't even remember his name. Oh my gosh, we're pitiful.
Stephen Clark.
Stephen Clark of Def Leppard, yes. Parkey and Clark were astonishingly good, but, you know, so was Wesley Byram. So were Bliss and Vaughn. We just had so many great kickers over the years. So you got to think that we brought in these guys, they've got to be good. Jimmy Hutchinson. They're both red shirts, so they've been around for a while. They're not getting off the bus, you know, and wide-eyed.
Guys at Auburn targeted and recruited. These are both scholarship players, the new punter and kicker.
Yeah, they're big.
We are not in that situation of other schools where we're like, our guys left and we're having tryouts taking kids out of the stands.
Right, thank goodness.
These were, you know, literally the best players at their position in the country coming out of high school, and they could have gone anywhere, and they went to Auburn. That gives me some hope that their talent combined with good coaching, you know, will make it fun. But you have to expect there's going to be some games next year where they don't perform like a senior. you know, where where stuff doesn't go perfectly. We have to roll with that. So
I see that they currently have our holder listed as Jonathan Wallace. That's interesting.
But I like that.
That'll make the 2-point little thing kind of fun, because he's certainly a commanding figure as a quarterback. You know, he's not the most, you know, he's not Nick Marshall physically, but he's a leader, you know, and he's smart.
And Ryan Smith was the holder last year. Mm-hmm. And Wallace is a much better passer than him.
Well, like I say, you want a high percentage play when you're doing that. And I see that we've got Corey Grant and Quan Bray back for kickoff returns currently, though that could change when the young guys get in there. You know, if Rock Thomas is just a revelation at kick return or something.
I could see like Corey Grant. I mean, Corey Grant at kick returner is outstanding.
You got to have Corey back there.
But I mean, I think you could put him. I could see Rock Thomas getting back there too. I could really see that.
Yeah. Well, over the years, we've tended to play some of our more impressive running backs. As you know, Trey was a kick returner. Mm-hmm. Cadillac was a kick returner.
It's a way to get them the ball in their hands and the open field.
Yeah.
And for, you know, to make stuff happen.
Sure. Any other position you want to do tonight?
Well, we talked about those two. I mean, we talked about punter. We talked about kicker. We talked about kick returner. Punt returner, probably looking at Quan Bray again. All the other guys are competing for it. We'll see what happens. Let's go straight to quarterback. That's the other one we're going to talk about tonight.
Okay. Well, I think we're in good hands.
And I think we have, you know, a better depth situation with Johnson having proven himself some last year.
Yeah, and good Lord, think of the ones coming in now behind him.
That's right.
We've got Tyler Queen, right, who's basically lined up to come in and is supposed to be good. He had elbow surgery, though, so that's a little concerning. What about this Torrence Gibson? If we get him away from Tennessee, we're currently second on his 15 team list. That's pretty impressive. They have a 15 team list in order. He must be related to me doing long lists in order like that. I love it.
That's a guy that we're signing next year. That's not going to be a guy.
I don't mean that. I'm just talking about down the road. It's just, we're piling up these potential quarterbacks. It's pretty impressive, but no, I mean, Jeremy Johnson is going to be the quarterback the next 2 years, you got to think, after 2014, right? So, you know, we're looking at who's going to be battling it out after, you know, when he's number one to back him up and everything.
Sure.
So you got to think we're better at quarterback simply because both guys have had a year's experience, right, and practice and stuff.
I think, again, last year – Johnson was a true freshman out of high school. We redshirted him for most of the year and then brought him in at a certain point. He didn't play that much. He only threw the ball 41 times. He's going to be a lot better this spring. Go through spring practice. Play some last year, get his feet wet, go to spring practice. He'll be much better. I think Nick Marshall is going to be better as a passer. I think we've talked about it a lot with the receivers being better.
Oh, yeah.
But I think he's going to be better, you know, he only completed 59% of his passes last year. He had 14 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, but he had a very high QB rating. He only averaged 150 yards a game. I think that could go way up. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, again, we've talked about 5% increase in his completion percentage. He completed 59% of his passes, and you looked around the top of the SEC last year, and it wasn't that much higher. So I think, you know, if he completes a little bit more in terms of completion percentage, then we're going to be in good shape. I mean, 64% level last year was Aaron Murray,
yeah,
Bo Wallace, Mettenberger. You know, that's the guys we're talking about there. So if he completes at the same level they are, we'll be fine. I think also I could see him lowering the interception totals a bit and raising the touchdown total.
The only thing on offense I see possibly taking a step back from last year is the pure running game, just the straight ahead running back, tailback, you know, running game, if at all. And I'm not saying it will. In fact, I'm not entirely convinced we won't be better with the guys we have, you know, coming in, joining the guys we already have left over. The only thing that makes me hesitate about that is that what Trey and that offensive line and Nick and everybody were able to do the second half of the season was among the most amazing things I've ever seen in college football. And it's hard to say that we will turn around and be just as good at that. But if we jack that passing up the way we think we can, it will more than compensate for any yards we lose not being a steamroller purely on the ground the way Trey was the last four or five games, don't you think?
I agree. I think the one thing that's going down is I think Marshall keeping the ball so much, gaining some yards, may go down a little bit.
Yeah.
I think they may run him a little bit less. I think, and yeah, you're right. I mean, that was a historically dominant rushing performance the last six games by Auburn. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to think that they're going to come out and be like that again. But I agree with you. I think the passing game, Marshall will be better throwing the ball, and that will – the increase in the passing numbers will make up for the rushing game.
And mark my words. I've said this before. Mark my words. Gus will begin the season trying to do what he wants to do. And if it doesn't work, then he will do what he has to do, which is what happened last year. I'm not saying the passing game didn't work, but think about the Washington State game. Think about, you know, the Mississippi State game. It wasn't until we quit doing what Gus really wanted to do, which is be a very balanced team, and when we turned into a bulldozer team, that's when we went to the national championship game. Gus will go to something like that if he has to, but he's going to give every opportunity, the first two or three games at least, to try to get that passing game to where he wants it. And that's good. I mean, that's a good thing. But, you know, we'll have to just see how well it clicks. I think it'll certainly click better than last year. There's just no doubt about it, right?
That's right.
I mean, how many times in the first couple of games last year did Nick just wildly overthrow a guy 5 feet away from him, you know?
I mean, he was rough early in the season.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget, you know, people think about those games at the end of the season when he didn't pass the ball much. But, you know, against Mississippi State, he threw the ball 34 times.
And hit, like, almost every pass on that last drive, if not every pass.
That's right. I mean, again, against Mississippi State, he was 23 for 34 for 339 yards, mm-hmm. with two touchdowns and two interceptions. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he averaged, you know, 10 yards an attempt.
We haven't talked about this. Remember about a third of the way through, well, all the way from preseason last year until about a third of the way through the season, what was something that you and I were chewing our fingernails over? Nick's interceptions.
That's right.
And then about that time, he just quit throwing it. He didn't throw like two interceptions the rest of the year because he just quit throwing it. I mean, he threw it some, but
his attempts went way down.
Yeah.
It's just right.
It's just hilarious to think of it now that we were so worried about interceptions, because when you look back at what 2013 was, you really don't have to worry about interceptions being a problem.
But I mean, he had six, and if you'd told me before the season he had six, you know, at the whole season, I'd have said that's fine.
Yeah, but I would think he probably had five of those in the first five games, and then one the remaining.
He had eight. Four in the first four games.
There you go. Okay, so it's just kind of funny.
Yeah.
All right. We got any listener questions? I haven't seen any. I haven't been looking.
We got a couple.
Okay.
Joseph Pierce wants us to do some research and think about this off the top of your head. You may know some of these answers. Do you know the current FBS teams that have beaten Auburn more than Auburn has beaten them?
Vanderbilt, the shame of Auburn. Oh, shame and eternal shame. To quote Henry V. The Vanderbilt Commodores currently have a win streak over us. I mean, have an all-time streak, because they beat us a bunch like in the 1730s during the colonial era at Williamsburg or whatever. Yeah. No, back in like the 20s or 30s or whatever, they won a bunch of games over us, and then they've won the last
two.
Yeah, just like Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt both have won the last two times they played us, so we need to fix that immediately.
Well, it's a good thing we get to play them a lot.
We'll catch up with Vanderbilt sometime in the 23rd century. We'll be beaming into that stadium. Oh, Lord.
It's funny. One of our listeners named Keith Dale Splawn hit me up on Twitter and was making fun of us because in the last chapter of our book, Decades of Dominance, we predict the future of Auburn football heading into last season.
Oh, dear.
And we said that we thought that Auburn would win the SEC in 2016. And we thought that was kind of aggressive.
Well, yeah, because he predicted that it would be 2013, I'm sure.
No, no, because he was just laughing that it didn't take that
well,
long.
Well, so. I guess my point is nobody. Yeah, it's funny that we actually put that in print, but nobody thought differently. I mean, look, I'm the first one to get on here and say when I knew something that nobody else knew. There's never been a problem there. But I will tell you right now, I didn't see it coming any more than anybody else. I thought we would be doing good to win 8 games. I thought that was pie in the sky, right? So, I think, but, you know, we did see it an upward trend, and we did see an SEC championship game coming, an SEC championship. So, yeah, I may have to go back and re-edit that and make people amazed when I go back and say, I think we will go 12-2 and play in the national championship game in 2013. People are like, whoa, how did they know that? No, you know. It's called second edition, boys and girls.
And what somebody else, the Ever to Conquer podcast, asked us to comment about the baseball coach situation.
Oh, Lord.
I don't think either you or I are qualified to throw any light on the Coach Galloway stuff.
Well, the situation very quickly is that he came in, was very much heralded as a savior, that we were so lucky to go out and get this guy that's won, I guess, played for one national championships at Oklahoma, right? And now we start to think, you know, maybe there's a reason that we were able to get him from Oklahoma, because he rubbed a lot of players the wrong way. Some of them quit. He's rubbed some of the supporters and the donors the wrong way. He's apparently very outspoken. And plus all that, in addition, we didn't do very well. And it's kind of the Brett Bielema effect, which is you can be an obnoxious loudmouth if you win. But you can't really do that and then go out and be like one of two teams that don't make it to Hoover or whatever, you know. So I think he's going to get another year, right?
Yep.
But it's hard to imagine after only 1 year they already have the hot seat under him.
It didn't go well. And I think, you know, I don't have a lot of insight into. I didn't watch a ton of baseball, so I can't, you know, second guess what he did on the field, or whatever. But
I'm just repeating the zeitgeist of it.
Sure, but I think I think the baseball team is the same situation as the basketball team is, which is I'm ecstatic about Coach Pearl and he's going to turn it around, but I don't expect an SEC title anytime soon. So.
I think that the football tickets went on sale in the last – the season tickets to the public went on sale today. I got the email. Not that it does me any good here in Illinois. But from everything I've heard, both football and basketball are selling better than they have in years.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I know that sounds like newsflash, but it's just good to see that. You know, it's just good to read it and know for sure that that is the case and not just speculation. So.
Well, I knew basketball tickets were going to sell better. I mean, they've been on the downhill for a couple of years. It's the ticket sales. Yeah,
they couldn't have done much worse.
There's excitement, so. Yeah. And again, football sales were down because you're coming off the 2012 season, which was, you know, us getting beat in the head every week. So
going to the dentist every week. Any other questions?
No, that's pretty much it for this week.
Okay. Well, I'll chastise our questioners on Twitter. Let's see. Do we want to do a World Cup minute?
Let's do a World Cup minute.
I'll make it a minute. Just the U.S. national team landed in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, Brazil today. They're training at a club team facility there in Sao Paulo. They open play, I want to say, on maybe June.
It's a week from today.
At
6 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN.
Against Ghana. And, yeah, Ghana's got their number the last few years. They really need to win this game. They've not taken Landon Donovan, so we've got Julian Green, this young player that's German. His dad's American, his mom's German. He grew up in Germany, speaks little English and mostly German. Phenom, you know, young kid. We'll see how he does. The team's got a lot of pressure on it. They're playing in the group of death. Can they get something accomplished? Man, it'll be awesome to see. This is possibly, arguably, the most solid lineup we've ever had. We've had other years where we had one or two players that were really good, maybe, but, you know, this team has a few stars on it, like Clint Dempsey. It's got a solid goalkeeper. It's got solid midfield with Bradley. It's got So much going for it. A good coach in Klinsmann, who's won a lot of games now as the U.S. coach the last couple of years. So, you know, everything is trending for us doing well in the World Cup, except for the fact that we play three really hard teams. You know, it's the same problem Auburn football is facing in 2014, actually, which is the team could be better, you know, than it's been in ever in a long time, but your schedule is harder. You know, so, which is something I should have said a while ago when we were talking about, you know, what the preseason magazines and prognosticators are saying about Auburn. And that is that, you know, I mentioned the numbers, and the behind the scenes on that is a lot of them have said Auburn could be a better team this year. Phil Steele said Auburn could be a better team this year and probably will be a better top to bottom team this year, and could still lose more games simply because the schedule. You know, going to Georgia, going to Alabama, we didn't really talk about. That is almost unacceptable. I've heard some Auburn fans say, you know, that's just unacceptable and we should have lain down in the road and not let that happen. At least more than, you know, 1 or 2 years to correct the schedule. It should not become an every year to Georgia, to Alabama. And did you catch, I made a suggestion that if we cannot change that back, then we should move the Georgia game earlier in the year and have a game that is a home game that year, like LSU, that's a bigger one, be the last home game. Now, you know, I had a couple of people, Will Collier and others, said, well, switching Georgia and LSU and having the LSU game right before Alabama, that doesn't help. And I'm like, well, no, it doesn't help in terms of competition because you're playing two hard games at the end of the year, but at least you're playing a home game and then Alabama away rather than playing Georgia on the road and then Alabama on the road. And it gives the city of Auburn a home good draw game to kind of be in November rather than all the, you know, you hate for Jordan-Hare Stadium to kind of end the season with like Mississippi State and Samford, and then it's done for the year, you know?
Sure.
So I would kind of advocate swapping on the location on the 2014 and future schedules, just swapping LSU and Georgia, not changing anything other than just when we play those two teams, but keep everything else the same.
That'd be a tough one for me.
What do you not like about it?
I like playing Georgia at the end of the year.
Well, I know, but if you got to go on the road to play them in Athens, okay, why not do it earlier? Well,
let me ask you this then.
All right.
Okay. If they came to you and said, we can fix this.
Yeah.
But Auburn is going to have to play in Athens 2 years in a row.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're fine with that.
Well, they just had to play in Auburn 2 years in a row.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think this is, you know, we're talking about solutions. This, it would have to be something like that.
Well, we own property in Clark County. I mean, why not? You know, we've done very well in that stadium. We probably got a better record in 100 years in Athens than they do against us.
Probably so.
So, all right. That was your World Cup minute, which somehow turned into the Auburn-Georgia LSU.
The Auburn World Cup minute turned into the SEC scheduling discussion.
There you go. Well, that's fine. All right. Anything else before we kind of move to our conclusion?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, don't forget to check out Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams. Our two books on Kindle and in paperback, they are on Amazon.com. Thursday is the World Cup. I'm going to start wearing my jerseys, and I'll be zipping out of class at 3 o'clock on Thursday and heading over to the Mexican cantina to watch the opening match, Brazil versus Croatia. Can't wait. A lot of good games Friday and Saturday, too. And also, don't forget to check out the White Rocket podcast if you're into movies and books and comics and pop culture and all kind of fun things. The sister show where sometimes John joins me, sometimes another guest, sometimes I go solo, just talking about fun pop culture stuff. It's the White Rocket podcast on iTunes and at www.whiterocketbooks.com. All right, John, that's another show in the books. And I reckon our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.